Okay. Good morning. I'm Maria Cooper. I'm from the Texas Health Institute. My colleagues are also joining me. Nadia Siddiqui and Dr. Dennis Andrewis contributed greatly to this report. I'm going to talk about the results from our report we just completed, titled Building Resilience to Climate Change for Vulnerable Communities of Color. We received support from the Kresge Foundation, and we partnered with the Joint Center for Political and Economic Studies, as well as the National Collaborative for Health Equity. Okay. I have no relationships to disclose. And I should mention that our report and our focus is really much more qualitative in nature than the previous report, but I think it really builds well on some of the research that we're seeing in climate change. The goal of our project was to look at 15 major U.S. cities and see what these cities were doing in terms of climate change adaptation, with a focus on vulnerable communities and specifically racially and ethnically diverse communities. So we know communities like this can be at a greater risk when it comes to disasters, climate change events, extreme weather, for reasons such as differences in culture, language differences, or socioeconomic differences. So that was really the focus of our project. What we wanted to do was document best practices and models across these cities and see what they were doing in terms of building climate change adaptation programs as well as building community resilience in general. Our approach was generally mixed methods, so we started with a thorough review of the literature, and then we used publicly available data to select the 15 cities in our report. Among these 15 cities, we did an in-depth program and policy review, and then we coupled this information with key informant interviews. So we interviewed folks at the city level, in the academic, nonprofit, and government sectors to really give us a more thorough understanding of what communities were doing. So in order to select the 15 cities for our review, we used, as I mentioned, publicly available data sources across three categories. So for exposure, we looked at measures such as daily fine particulate matter, projected heat deaths, number of drought impacts, things like that. For our sensitivity measure, these were more related to socio-demographic vulnerability, so percent racially and ethnically diverse populations, percent poverty, the percent linguistically diverse populations as well. And in terms of adaptive capacity, we wanted to take into account what cities were doing currently and what kind of initiatives they had in place to plan for a changing climate. So things like having a greenhouse gas emissions target and inventory, as well as a participation in programs such as the Urban Sustainability Directors Network and the Resilient Communities for America. So we started, in order to select the cities for our review, we started with the 50 most populous cities in the U.S., and then we used these measures that I described with a weighted emphasis on socio-demographic vulnerability. We reviewed local programs among these 15 cities. If you have trouble, they're mapped out here. I'll go ahead and read them if you have trouble seeing that. The cities we included were Sacramento, Boston, Chicago, New York, Philadelphia, Baltimore, Oakland, Cleveland, Phoenix, Dallas, Las Vegas, Denver, Atlanta, Miami, and Detroit. And so we went in depth and identified programs for climate change adaptation at the local level, as well as programs related to broader community resiliency. And we really focused in on programs that included or had an emphasis on racially and ethnically diverse populations. At the city government level, we also looked at those adaptation planning efforts and documented the degree of progress made and the level of planned development. So specifically, we really wanted to see which plans explicitly mentioned focusing on or targeting racially and ethnically diverse communities or linguistically diverse communities, and which plans mentioned explicitly community resilience. And as I mentioned, we conducted key informant interviews. So this slide actually summarizes the table that I'll show you in the next slide, but it gives you an overview of the findings. So we found that among these 15 cities, 10 currently had climate adaptation plans in place, As you can imagine, the level of development varied by city. So some cities had separate standalone plans, while others had adaptation plans that were more incorporated into an overall climate action plan. Three cities were currently developing climate adaptation plans, and two did not have a formal plan in development. So this gives you an overview. And you can see that really only a few, actually only four, had an explicit mention of racially and ethnically diverse populations. So those were Boston, Chicago, Miami, and Phoenix. And we found that in general, in terms of progress made, cities tended to fall within three tiers. The first tier was made up of the leading cities, and they had several characteristics in common. They all had a strong leader and a visible champion for climate change efforts, as well as close alliances with community-based organizations or nonprofit groups. These cities also tended to have very clear goals for addressing climate change adaptation or community resilience, and really importantly, they found creative ways to integrate these goals into broader efforts at the city level. The next group of cities were making more moderate progress in planning efforts. They were at the earlier, a little bit earlier stages of adaptation planning, but most of these cities still had strong involvement from community-based organizations and nonprofit groups in order to engage diverse populations. But these cities did seem to share more of a need to systematically identify community vulnerabilities. And in the last tier, there were cities that were at the comparatively earlier stages in preparing vulnerable populations, and they shared a few points of needed focus. So there was more need to focus on comprehensive planning at the city level, and a greater need to engage with community or nonprofit organizations to help prepare diverse populations for a changing climate. And during our review, several key elements really emerged, especially as we were conducting our key informant interviews and our program review. And one of these was that defining vulnerability tended to vary greatly across cities. But we found that we found it really important to include measures of racial and ethnic diversity within vulnerability measures. So to take into consideration that some of these populations are at considerably higher risk when it comes to being vulnerable to extreme weather events and climate change. We found that the risk and needs assessment also tended to vary across cities, and there didn't seem to be a one-size-fits-all approach to risk and needs assessment. So some cities had very quantitative measures for identifying needs, while others implemented some more qualitative community-based participatory research and qualitative methods to identify isolated populations and vulnerable populations. We also found that community participation was key in building resilience to climate change. So this included involving communities in the assessment, planning, and evaluation. And it also involved getting communities incorporated in the program rollout and development, so participating in drills, trainings, and exercises. So, for example, in Detroit, representatives there held a series of sector-based meetings and larger community focus groups in order to engage the community and engage stakeholders. Another key element that came about during our review, and this was a really common one, was the importance of cross-sector collaboration. So we found that collaboration at all levels, as well as across organizations, experts, and communities, was very important. So in the government sector, this included collaboration with offices of emergency management, sustainability, and environment, as well as planning and health departments. And health departments really emerged as an important partner because they tended to have a history of addressing health equity that might predate some of these climate change efforts. In addition, an important collaborator was the role of the nonprofit sector. They were really seen as central partners, especially when it comes to engaging racially and ethnically diverse populations. So one example, a group in Boston, the Boston Climate Action Network, for example, is holding focus groups with the Latino community to discuss different views on climate change and engage this population. And another key theme that emerged to building resilience to climate change was the idea of job creation and building economic opportunities in the cities. So some cities in our review were offering innovative career building and training opportunities in the green jobs sector. So one example is a group in Detroit. Detroit is working for environmental justice. They're an environmental justice organization. They're training underrepresented groups in jobs, in green jobs such as weatherization, lead and asbestos abatement, and energy efficiency. In addition to these key themes, several challenges also emerged during our review. So the top challenge I think that really came about, especially as we were doing our interviews, was the idea of limited funding and lack of resources in general to undertake climate change adaptation. This was a top barrier that was cited. And sometimes, even when funding was available, some of our key informants mentioned that there still tended to be limited resources or limited capacity to do some of this work. Another barrier that came out as we did our review was that climate change didn't always emerge as a top priority. So this is especially true when working with vulnerable communities. Sometimes these communities have very pressing and immediate needs. So it might be, safety in the community, making ends meet, day-to-day challenges. And when it comes to working with these groups, climate change can be a very abstract idea or an idea that's seen in the future. So once I get into the recommendations, we'll talk about some things that people were doing to face this challenge. So our report outlined six recommendations in general to build resilience at the city level for climate change. The first was to incorporate adaptation into plans with broader community goals. So this includes things like sustainability, health, economic viability, and to basically have a more integrated approach. The second recommendation was to partner with community-based organizations and other nonprofits that had a history of working with communities of color. So we found this to be important because, as I mentioned, these partnerships tend to have relationships and a history with different groups throughout the city and can be a valuable partner when targeting some of these groups. Our third recommendation was to identify overlap in climate adaptation goals with other city-level planning efforts. So this came about as an important way to help reduce duplication of efforts, and as well as another way to maximize limited resources. So one example was to use things like all-hazard mitigation planning to help come up with climate adaptation assessment and goals. Other cities are working with city CERT teams to train vulnerable communities to respond to extreme weather events. So this is an interview response, and I thought it illustrated some of our points. One of our respondents said, "In our city, there is a huge focus on safety and education, which are very essential to a healthy city. These take priority over the climate-related work that we're doing. We see a more holistic system, one in which we can provide educational opportunities, get kids outdoors, make spaces better, enhance education, and enhance greater resilience and sustainability." Another recommendation that we found was that engaging low communities of color in climate adaptation and supporting economic opportunities was really important. So many cities recognized that there were basically a two-pronged benefit in this approach in investing in the green sector. So it brings financial vitality to communities, and it also offers sustainable means of advancing environmentally friendly practices. In addition, we found it was important for cities to identify creative ways to leverage funds for climate change adaptation, especially in terms of limited resources and funding. So this might include things like philanthropy, partnering with universities and students, as well as incorporating climate change into public health efforts. So one example that we came across along the way was funding for a diabetes management might actually provide an opportunity to look at why people with diabetes are at an increased risk from health effects from heat. So finding creative ways to leverage those kinds of opportunities. And finally, our last recommendation was to assure climate change messages are clear, nonpartisan, and culturally and linguistically appropriate. So we have several documented resources of good examples of ways that cities are providing culturally appropriate and translated information on ways individuals can participate in emergency preparedness and climate change adaptation. So this might include ways that they can engage in mitigation and adaptation activities, ways they can reduce their carbon consumption, or, for example, know where a cooling center is. So this is another example, another quote from one of our respondents who said, many people have been kind and donated services to this process. She's talking about planning for climate change. We didn't have the resources or expertise to develop any new tools. We used the greenhouse gas tool developed by the EPA for the municipal and community level. Our group has partnered with our local university where students use the greenhouse gas tool as part of the project. And I'll go ahead and conclude by saying that, in general, these 15 cities offered a wealth of information and experience to draw from. They varied greatly at the level of progress they had made, but I think that we can draw some important conclusions from the best practices as well as the challenges in order to continue to learn. My contact information. Our report is going to be released in the next week or two, so if you'd like a copy of it, please send me an email and I can include you in our distribution list. Thank you. They did. So we started with the 50 most populous cities in the U.S., and then we looked at, I can go back to one of the slides here. So we looked at measures across three areas, and so we did look at racial and ethnic diversity as well as poverty and unemployment. And so for each city, we listed those out as well as exposure and adaptive capacity criteria, but we placed the most emphasis on the sensitivity measures, so poverty and racial and ethnic diversity, and that's how we ranked the top 15. Yeah, so we didn't actually get into occupational health that much. It didn't come up that much in our review, but that's an interesting point.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was really interesting.